Sydney Ellen Wade has done nothing to you, Bob. She has done nothing but put herself through school, represent the interests of public school teachers, and lobby for the safety of our natural resources. You want a character to debate, Bob? You better stick with me, because Sydney Ellen Wade is way out of your league.
A charming widower tries to balance his new relationship with his demanding job, President of the United States. This week, we discuss Alexa's in the White House, Millard Fillmore's character, and Elon Musk's dating life. Then we find out if 1995's The American President stands the test of time.
Test of time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says, Gladiator with a glut. Alan says, as a father, blah, blah. It's the test of time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of The Test of Time. My name is Alan Noah.
And I'm James Brief. And are you implying that the other 200-something episodes were not special, Al?
No, I am not implying that. They are all very special. But, guys, it's over. The election happened, and Biden won. Thank God! I am so happy. I am so relieved. The landslide victory that we were all hoping and praying for, it finally came to pass. Oh my God, what a relief.
All right. Yeah. I mean, congratulations, President-elect Biden. And, you know, hopefully the country can now transition to a peaceful path to reunification.
Indeed. Pause for edit. Okay. Why don't you say it? I don't know if I could say the words.
Well, the election happened, and Donald Trump has been reelected.
No! How could this happen?
I mean, through a series of what seems to be technically the ruling of the courts and everything, he's certified, and it looks like he's going to be our president for the next 4 years.
God help us all.
Okay. All right. Pause for edit. Are we done? Are we done?
No, we should do like the last one.
All right, well, yeah. All right, we'll do the last one. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the election happened on Tuesday, and when you thought 2020 couldn't be any crazier, congratulations to President-elect Kanye West. Yeezy did it. He pulled it out. I mean, no one saw that coming, but it's just been a crazy roller coaster of a year. It's going to be a very interesting season of keeping up with the Kardashians. All right, pause for edit last time. More realistic one. Well, the election was on Tuesday. I hope everyone voted. Who knows who won? Maybe we'll find out soon. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, we'll know. It might be a while. We're all just going to keep on checking Twitter and CNN and 538 over and over again. Maybe everyone will. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But the good news is that for the next, I don't know, 40 minutes, an hour, however long it takes us to discuss it, we're going to be talking about a fictional American president. Whether you like Trump, whether you like Biden, it doesn't matter, because we're going to be talking about President Andrew Shepard, the Aaron Sorkin creation from the 1995 movie The American President. James, you picked this movie as a movie we should watch around the election, and I will say that was a very good idea. And I'd actually never seen this movie before. Had you?
Yeah, I'd seen it. I don't believe I saw it in the theater, but it's one of those things that I'd seen probably on HBO at some point. And then I hadn't seen it for a while. And had you ever seen Aaron Sorkin's TV show, The West Wing?
No, I haven't. And I saw a few episodes of Sports Night along the way. I watched the entire series, which was only one season, of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. And I did watch all three seasons of The Newsroom, but I did not watch The West Wing. I know that this movie sort of led to The West Wing because he enjoyed writing about politics and the president and the White House, and working on this movie, The American President, kind of led to that show.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost like the original Star Trek TV show had an original pilot, and then there was another pilot that had William Shatner and all the people that we know. This is almost like a pilot that they kind of recast everything. everyone in the West Wing. Martin Sheen is now the president in the West Wing. There are a number of people that are in this film that wind up joining the West Wing. And there's a couple people in Sports Night. And a lot of people talk about this being an Aaron Sorkin film. And, you know, it really is, because it's such a dialogue-heavy screenplay. And there's one person that we're really not giving enough credit to, and that's the director. This is Rob Reiner's, I'd say it's the last of his absolute, you know, hitting them all out of the park, because look at the streak he had had since 1984 when he did This Is Spinal Tap, then 86 he does Stand By Me, 87, what did he do, Al? Can you guess?
Princess Bride.
Yep. And then the next one in 1989, I'll give you a hint, it had three dots in the title.
You mean an ellipsis, When Harry Met Sally?
Yes, yes, yes. Very good. Next, this author has his adaptations are really hit or miss. And I haven't seen this one in many years, but it was definitely a hit when it came out.
Misery.
That's right. And then one of those films that has not just a famous line, but I would say almost an iconic line.
A Few Good Men.
Right. And that's another Aaron Sorkin screenplay. Then in 1995, he has The American President. I mean, he had North in 1994 before this one. And then I'd say he had hit his peak. I mean, he has some more. He has definitely some more hits. He had the Bucket List. But Rob Reiner, I don't think he gets respect. Like, that list I just said is an unbelievable list of half a dozen films.
Yeah, we've got to review, like, pretty much all of the ones you just said. North, I could skip, but like, we're definitely going to do This Is Spinal Tap and When Harry Met Sally and Misery and A Few Good Men. Rob Reiner is an incredible director. Robert Redford was originally going to star in this movie, but he and Rob Reiner didn't get along. And that was what led to the casting of Michael Douglas, which is interesting to think of how this movie could have been different with Robert Redford. But I think Rob Reiner does a good job directing this.
Well, I'll tell you that this is the kind of film that you could cut it a lot of different ways to emphasize a lot of different subplots and character flaws of every character. And I can really see that Rob Reiner's vision being different than what someone else wanted to do. The film does have its points, and it definitely lets you know what they are. And in case you haven't seen this film is about the fictional U.S. President Andrew Shepard, played by Michael Douglas. President Shepard is heading into an election year, and he has a high approval rating. But things start to go wrong for this president, who's a widower, when he starts to fall for a lobbyist named Sidney Ellen Wade, played by Annette Bening. And President Shepard's political rivals, they begin to attack him for his lack of so-called family values. And as his support falls, the president must choose between his political future and doing what's right for the country and his heart.
Aww. So, I don't really remember when this movie came out in 1995, but was it a big hit?
You know, it's kind of a modest hit. According to Wikipedia, this film had a $60 million budget.
Wow.
Yeah, I would imagine it's the elaborate sets, and like the Oval Office is like a perfect replica of the Oval Office, apparently. And yeah, of course, you know, this cast is not cheap. And Rob Reiner at his peak here, you know, it's an expensive film to get everyone together, I'd say. The film opened on November 17th, 1995, and it opened at number three with $10 million. So number one was a film that broke what was forever until this time a rule about video games and movies.
Super Mario Brothers?
No, no, no. The rule was never play a video game based on a movie because they're almost always terrible. Up until this movie was out in the Thanksgiving time of 1995. What movie is that?
I have no idea, man.
I'll tell you, it was probably one of the games that made the Nintendo 64 as popular as it was. Not a Nintendo brand game.
Oh, GoldenEye.
Yes. So GoldenEye was number one. And then number two was a film that this guy is an A-lister, and he's only done two sequels in his whole career. And this was one of them. He's a comedian.
I don't know.
Jim Carrey.
Oh.
Do you know the two sequels he has done?
He's done Ace Ventura, : When Nature Calls.
Right, which was number two that weekend.
Oh, okay. And Dumb and Dumber 2, spelled T-O.
That's correct. Yeah, so this film, it opened with $10 million after those first two films. And, you know, this film had legs. Domestically, it took in $60 million. And worldwide, it took $107 million. So it didn't do gangbusters for the producers. It definitely didn't make all of its money back at the box office.
I see. Well, let's get into the movie itself. So it starts with President Shepard, who's doing really well. He's got a 63% approval rating, and they talk about the approval rating a lot throughout this movie. It's very, very important to everybody in this White House. And the president has just delivered this speech, and Lewis, who works in the White House with him, who wrote the speech, is complaining to the president because he left out an important part of the speech. He sort of ended it on, people can no longer think that America is a great society. And then he was supposed to say, but, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the president just kind of ended the speech there. And Lewis is upset. Lewis, I should mention, is played by Michael J. Fox. Always great to see him. And the important part of the speech that was cut out was about handguns. And Lewis really thinks that the president should go after handguns and, you know, make legislation that is anti-gun, but that's not super popular. So the president's kind of on the fence and he's looking ahead to re-election. There's some line in there about how he has to win Michigan and California to win re-election, which is kind of funny that California is a state that would be in play. Although I guess Ronald Reagan won California. So I guess it wasn't inconceivable in 1995 that a Republican could win the state of California.
Well, Ronald Reagan won everything in 1984, pretty much. Right. He won like 49 states, 48 states, something like that. And this is a masterful screenplay because something Aaron Sorkin does is he's introducing these things very quickly. So they introduce Michigan and California because later on, it's the Michigan and California guys that are going to be very important, these congressmen. And they mention something like CSTAT, and you don't talk about what that is. But later someone's going to mention, oh, CSTAT, you mean the strategic missile defense thing? And they don't mention it again till later. And then finally, someone else is going to mention, yes, CSTAT, the defense missiles that we have in Israel. Like, it slowly feeds it to you. And the president, he's kind of swimming with this 63% approval rating because, you know, presidents never have this. I mean, occasionally, like right after 9/11, like President Bush had like a 90% approval rating. But when a president has 50% or a little bit above that, that's amazing. And like 63% is, you know, everyone really loves what this guy's doing. His personality is seen very positively by people because it turns out he's a widower. And as we later find out, it's now been about 4 years since his wife died of some kind of cancer. So he has a very decent image.
Right. And his political priorities are this crime bill, which may or may not have the section about restricting guns. Lewis wants it to restrict guns, and the president is kind of on the fence, but then quickly abandons that, and this environmental bill. And the great debate is what percent emissions should be cut. And the environmental lobby wants them to cut emissions by 20%. And everyone is telling him that it'll never pass with that. That is too aggressive. They can maybe go for 10%. Then this environmental group hires a lobbyist to really get the president to agree to a 20% emission cut. And that woman is Sidney Ellen Wade, played by Annette Bening. And she goes into the White House. Day one, she's like a take no prisoners kind of lobbyist. She's talking about the president when he's not in the room, saying he's going to go for 20% if he knows what's good for him, or he's like a fool, or he's an idiot, something. And then the president walks in. It's that classic movie trope of, oh no, he's standing right behind me, isn't he? But the president is not mad about it. He invites her into the Oval Office to discuss it. And it's clear pretty quickly that he likes her. It's not necessarily immediately clear that she likes him, but they definitely have that movie romance banter kind of thing going on.
This guy is like the looks of a John F. Kennedy. He's a widower and he's got this beautiful daughter, and it's pretty obvious where this is going.
Right. And so he's trying to be charming with Sydney, and she is trying to do her job and be aggressive about the bill she wants to pass. And the president makes a deal with her that they need 34 votes in order for this bill to pass. And if Sydney is able to get 24 votes, then the president will get the last 10. And he sees this as a good strategic move, because that way, if it fails, it's not his fault. If it succeeds, then she did all of the hard work. But then he decides that he also kind of likes her and he wants to ask her out. And he has this moment where he's playing pool with AJ, who is played by Martin Sheen and is the White House chief of staff. And he's Andrew Shepard's like oldest friend or best friend or very good friend. And it's a running gag that AJ keeps calling the president Mr. President and Sir. And Andrew Shepard's like, can you just call me Andy? We've been friends for a million years. You were best man at my wedding. And AJ's like, I will take that under advisement, sir. And the president's asking AJ for advice, like, can I ask her out? And AJ's like, you really shouldn't. Everything's going great. This is a bad idea. But he's like, as a friend, what do you think I should do? And AJ says, yeah, ask her out. And the president calls up this woman. And then Sydney's surprised because she doesn't even have her own apartment. So she doesn't have her own phone number. Keep in mind, this is before cell phones. You only had a landline. And I really did think that her sister, whose apartment she's staying at, really had a Hillary Rodham Clinton mid-90s look. Did that kind of grab you at all?
Oh, I think the whole name Sydney Ellen Wade was completely Hillary Rodham Clinton. And Annette Bening is a beautiful woman, and I think that she represents kind of the look of Hillary Clinton, but of course has this smile that's, it's a Hollywood smile.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's her sister that really looked like Hillary Clinton.
They both had this cut, and the sister had blonde hair. I guess it's not quite the Rachel haircut.
Oh, no, it's not the Rachel. The Rachel was like out more.
Yeah, and that was a little longer.
Yeah.
But these were definitely 90s haircuts.
Absolutely. And when the president is flirting with her, Sydney becomes like a giggling schoolgirl. And it's a contrast because she's a powerful lobbyist and she's really good at her job, but she does sort of like become this like, hee-hee, I think he likes me, tee-hee-hee. And this is sort of in line with a criticism that Aaron Sorkin has faced throughout his career. And yes, this is early in his career. He's been called sexist many times. It's been said that he's not great at writing female characters. And I did kind of just catch that watching this movie of like, yeah, she really turns giddy. And I guess you could argue that, well, yeah, it's the president asking her out, so that's fair, but it's just something that caught my eye.
I mean, that's certainly a fair point. There's a point when Sydney doesn't know that she's speaking to the president, and she's commenting on, so what if he has a fantastic ass? You know, she thinks he's an incredibly good-looking guy. And you get the idea that he is charismatic, and he's accomplished, but I'm not sure if it's sexist in any way, because, you know, I've heard of stories of people meeting Barack Obama and they're just kind of giddy around the guy. And, you know, they're just so excited to meet their hero. People who met Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Elizabeth Warren. And I'm sure people that see Donald Trump as their iconic hero, when they meet Donald Trump, they're probably a similar way. So maybe what you're saying is true. But it could just be that we know that this woman is genuinely attracted to him. But also that, you know, he's a charismatic guy.
Right. And the president. So she does agree to go out with him to this state dinner. It's in honor of the French president, and the French president and his wife look bored and no one speaks French. But Sydney does, and she's able to charm the French president and his wife, and they start talking about, isn't it interesting that there's this grand ballroom and this beautiful music, but nobody is dancing? And then the president asks Sydney for a dance. All eyes are on them. This is the iconic shot that's on the poster and will probably be the little thumbnail image I choose for this episode. And she's like, I can't believe it. Everyone's staring at you. How do you do this? And everyone's thinking, who is this girl that the president's dancing with? And why is she dancing with him? And he says, no, they're not staring at me. They're staring at you. And who you are is Sydney Ellen Wade. And I'm dancing with you because you said yes. And he's got it. He's charming as hell. He tries to order her flowers, and it's kind of a gag because he wants to order the flowers and not have one of his staff members do it, but he needs to have her get him the number because, of course, this is before cell phones and he just can't Google, you know, Washington, D.C. florist. And he wants to get her dogwood because that's a Virginia state flower and no one knows what the Virginia state flower is, and isn't dogwood a tree? And this all felt very like Sorkin-esque to me, this whole scene.
Yeah, the only part that was very test of timey was head secretary. She's the woman that knows everything. And they're like, Mrs. Chapel, what is the state flower of Virginia? And of course, she immediately knows it. And she knows that, yes, it is both a tree and a flower. But right now, that's Wikipedia. So, I mean, you know, it's even Alexa. You know, although, God, I would hope they do not have Alexas in the, you know, the Oval Office.
That would be a really bad idea. In the Trump administration, there's probably like 20 of them. Although, no, actually, there probably aren't because Trump hates Bezos.
Maybe it's all okay Googles.
Maybe. So Shepard can't get Sydney the flowers that he wants, but he's able to send a gift basket over to her job. And her boss is played by John Mahoney, the dad on Frasier. And we last saw him in The Line of Fire. Wait, was there something else he was in?
We see him in a lot of stuff. Oh, we saw him in a Moonstruck.
Oh, right.
He's like a 50-something-year-old, and all he does is he dates like 18-year-olds until they realize that he has nothing more than like two dates worth of interesting stories.
Right. John Mahoney's always a great actor, and he's pissed that Sydney was dancing with the president, and he asks point blank, did you sleep with him? Which is horrible and sexist and misogynistic. And she's like, how dare you? You have no right to ask about my personal life. And he's like, well, I kind of do because it's the president. And he keeps making all these references to egg timers. Like, your career will be over so quick, it can be measured with an egg timer. And I don't know, that to me was like a thing that also doesn't stand the test of time. And also, who needs an egg timer because of Alexa? You could just have Alexa set a timer in the kitchen. That's what I always do.
Well, I wouldn't say that egg timers are obsolete.
Do you have an egg timer, James?
I used to. I used to have a little pasta timer that came with a box of Barilla. It was very cute. It was a little rooster that you twisted it, but it broke.
Oh, I remember that. I actually remember that pasta timer of yours. But egg timers notwithstanding, now that the president has a new romantic interest, remember, we are coming into an election year, and his chief Republican rival is this senator named Rumson. Actually, do they ever say in this movie that Rumson is Republican and Shepard is a Democrat? It's very, very crystal clear that that's the parties that they are. I don't know that they ever say the words, do they? Maybe I missed it.
I thought they did. I'm
possible.
Not 100% sure, but it's obvious. And this is a complete coincidence. That Rumson is played by Richard Dreyfuss. Mm-hmm. And the head Republican in 1995 was a man named Newt Gingrich, who had a distinct look. But this guy, that Richard Dreyfuss's character, he really looks like Mitch McConnell.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Dick Cheney. He sort of looks like a mix between McConnell and Cheney.
All right, fine. He is a classic, I'll say, Republican archetype.
Yes, 1,000%. And the line of attack, quote unquote, on like how to go after Shepard is to attack his character. And this is a thing that definitely stands a test of time. We have seen that a ton in the 2020 election cycle. Biden calling into question Trump's character rather easily, and Trump trying to make an issue of Biden's character and, you know, Hunter's emails and Hunter's laptops and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, it's all about character. It's not about the healthcare plan. It's just about Sleepy Joe.
Right.
That's what it is. And it's something as old as time. And I'm sure if you looked at, you know, Millard Fillmore campaign posters, there were similar ads that are trying to attack the character.
Don't fucking dare insult the character of Millard Fillmore, you son of a bitch.
I'm talking about his opponent.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case. But the whole thing is that Rumson and Republicans couldn't attack Shepard's character when he ran for election the last time because he was a recent widower. But now that he's got a girlfriend, you can attack his character. And they start ruthlessly attacking the president for having a girlfriend and this woman, and it like hurts his popularity. His 63% approval rating plummets, and I just didn't get it, like, at all. The phrase they use is family values, and that's definitely like a 90s thing when Republicans talked about family values and they were the party of good old-fashioned family values and one husband and one wife and two children and a white picket fence, and that was the family, damn it, and nothing else. But even in that context, you know, notwithstanding people who are divorced and widowed and gay and, you know, non-traditional couples, it just doesn't matter because this guy's a widower. His wife died 4 years ago. He's dating someone. Who cares? Why does that hurt his popularity?
What they were saying was not that he's dating someone. It's that he's having sex down the hall from his daughter. I mean, generally, that's what, you know, a lot of married and unmarried couples will do with children. So it's the height of hypocrisy, Al. It's a lot of people throw stones in glass houses. You're right. It's not a scandalous thing. But they did make a scandal out of Hillary Clinton's email server, like, and of Obama ordering Dijon mustard. And yes, the Democrats made a huge deal when we were kids. And to this point, I thought this person was an absolute moron. There was a man named Dan Quayle, mm-hmm. who apparently spelled the word potato wrong. And you remember this story, Al.
Yeah.
And it was completely associated with him. There was a man, Howard Dean in 2004, he got really excited at one speech and he makes like a hee-haw, yee-haw or something. And this one yee-haw sinks his character that he's crazy. America is obsessed with character. Any of these things, family values, it doesn't even matter what they're attacking. You say it enough times, some people will start believing it. And yeah, maybe they don't use the word family values, but they might say traditional values now.
I guess, and you're right, there's always going to be some scandal, something based on character. I think just like the idea of a widower engaging in a public consensual relationship with an age-appropriate partner, like I just don't see how that could be a scandal today. I think that thing wouldn't really fly.
Well, you're actually right. I think in the universe of this film, I actually like to think that it didn't really register that far. And probably a lot of people deep down were like, I hope he can settle down. Because wasn't that really sad when we saw the video of his beautiful then, like, probably 8-year-old daughter crying at the funeral? Maybe someday he'll get, you know, a lovely second wife for him to raise that beautiful girl. And right. He does. But what the Republicans then get is then they get to attack the character of the girlfriend. She is a lobbyist, so by definition, she does take partisan issues on things for her job, but there is eventually, as we find out, there's an old picture of her from her college days when she joined some ACLU protest and there was a burning flag, which in the 90s was more of a thing than it is today.
Much
burning more. The flag was a real hot button issue, but it's just a dog whistle. It's the kneeling at the flag today. It's pick your like fake symbolic idea of America. People will say you're stepping on the graves of soldiers for doing it. Whether you're burning the flag, whether you're kneeling before the flag, whether you won't say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, whether you won't say the Pledge of Allegiance, whether you won't put your hand on your heart for that. You know, there's always going to be something that somebody is upset with, and you just have to say something like traditional values.
Right. I get that. That's a good point. I mean, I did feel like the flag burning thing was very mid-90s, but, you know, comparing it to kneeling during the national anthem, that's a totally valid point. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. As the relationship is beginning, Sydney is hesitant. She tries to break up with the president, but the president doesn't give up so easily. And he has this whole monologue to her about why she's nervous. And the reason that she's nervous is because she is just meeting him as the president. And it wasn't a big deal for every other first lady in history, or I guess maybe one or two exceptions, but pretty much every other first lady, because all of those women knew the president before he was the president. And she only knows him as the president. And I thought that was like a really interesting dynamic. And it really sort of addresses the power imbalance in that relationship where, yes, she's a strong, independent woman, but he's the president. And like, yeah, there is going to be an imbalance there. And I really liked that conversation and where it was going. But then Sydney just kind of ends it by coming into the room wearing his shirt and saying, let's just have sex. And that's really all they kind of get into with the power imbalance. It's sort of like then that issue is resolved, which again, sort of with the Sorkin criticism, I could see that they should have continued that conversation. One, because, you know, it would have been, I think, a little bit more realistic, but also just because that scene is so good and the dialogue is so good. I just wanted like more of those kinds of conversations. And that's really interesting, you know, like what's it like for her to date the president? It's got to be insane. And it is insane. And we see some glimpses of that. But every time he has to like, oh, got to cut this short, I've got to go deal with a crisis, she's like, okay, bye, call you later. It's like not that big of a deal. You would think there would be more to it than that.
Well, I really like that speech because I think it's all the president doing the talking. And I think it's kind of a test. He says things that make her feel at ease because, you know, you look at a guy like Elon Musk. He is a billionaire. Any person that dates him, he's got to be wondering, do they like me because I'm a, you know, a nice, charming guy, or because I have, you know, three commas when you list my net worth? And, you know, you take a guy like Mark Zuckerberg, and he met his wife, Priscilla Chen. He met her at Harvard when she just knew him as just some computer science dork, and she was just some, you know, pre-med. And there's something to the fact that, you know, at least he knows that she didn't like him because he was one of the most powerful men in the world. And Michael Douglas is in this awkward position where, you know, he didn't want to meet this lovely woman like this, but he did. There's a funny line where he's like, you know, the most powerful man in the world. I want you to know that's a political distinction, you know, he doesn't say it, but not a sexual distinction. And, you know, it's not just putting her at ease, but he's also incredibly nervous because, sure, by all accounts, this guy has not had sex in maybe it's been several years. And he's very nervous as the most powerful man in the world. And I like it a lot. And she kind of puts him at ease. Like, it's okay. Like, I'll take it from here. That's kind of how I took it.
Yes, yes. I think that's 100% right. I think that sort of does play into the criticism that Sorkin gets, where the women just are there to kind of like put the man at ease. But I'm not trying to like criticize Aaron Sorkin too much. I mean, those pieces exist. You can Google them. But when you watch a scene like that, you get it. But, you know, it sort of made me think, not of Elon Musk or Zuckerberg, it sort of made me think of Superman and the end of Superman 2, where Lois is kind of saying, like, not in these words, but I'm going to have to share you with the world. The world's always going to need you, and you're never going to be fully mine, and I don't want that because I'm selfish. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic, And that's also like in 30 seconds at the very end of Superman 2. They don't explore that at all, and certainly not in any of the sequels, which is unfortunate. But like, I just think that's an interesting, you know, thing to explore, and they don't do it in Superman 2, and they don't really do it in this movie. And I just think that's a little bit of a missed opportunity. Instead, what they do have to deal with is more attacks from Rumson. He basically accuses her of being a prostitute, saying that she exchanged political favors for sex.
No, he doesn't accuse her. He says, "I'm not accusing her. I'm just saying, when you hear one thing, you dismiss it. When you hear two or three things, you know, you maybe go, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, who knows?" That's basically what he says.
It was very Trumpian.
Exactly. He does not accuse her, and he specifically says, "I'm not accusing her." It was his version of "people are saying."
Yeah, that's still an accusation.
Yeah, so that really stands up.
Yeah, that's like saying, "You're a big, fat, stupid loser, no offense." Hey, that was very offensive. It couldn't possibly have been. I said no offense. It's still offensive. It's still an accusation. But the environmental bill comes back again because while Sydney is trying to get these votes, she accidentally, maybe, sort of reveals that she can't get these three votes from these three Michigan congressmen because they hate the environmental bill and they hate the crime bill, but it turns out they hate the environmental bill more. So the implication is if the president scraps the environmental bill, they'll go along with the crime bill, which is the president's top priority. But wouldn't you know it, Sydney's able to get all of the 24 votes that she needed from their initial deal way back in the beginning of the movie. And now it's up to the president to get the 10 that he needs, and he's exactly three short. So he does the worst possible thing he could do for his relationship, which is to take the deal with the Michigan congressman, get the votes that he needs, but it costs Sydney her job. And she is furious. She's mad about what he did to her on a personal level and on a political level, because as it's been said throughout this movie many times by Lewis, Michael J. Fox's character, this crime bill that the president's really pushing, it's toothless. It's not going to affect crime because he's not going after the guns hard enough. So it's like the appearance of being tough on crime, but not really doing anything, which again does kind of rubber stamp the movie as mid-90s, because as was talked about a lot in this election cycle and Joe Biden and the crime bills of the 90s, Democrats had to appear tough on crime. That was like what Republicans were saying constantly. "You guys aren't tough on crime." And Democrats had to pass this legislation, you know, which could be argued didn't reduce crime, but disproportionately put a lot of people of color in prison.
Oh, it was completely a prophecy of what was to come, you know, a crime bill that didn't really reduce crime. And, you know, it's worth noting that there's predictably a total media and paparazzi circus surrounding Sidney Ellen Wade. There's a time when there's a bombing and, you know, the press is supposed to ask all these questions about the strategic thing and are we going to war? But all people want to talk about is, did Sidney Ellen Wade spend the night? There's a dinner that they go to at some place in Georgetown, which is a neighborhood in Washington, D.C. And it looks just like when, you know, Prince William was dating Kate Middleton and they go on a date or something. Like, it looked very realistic, but up until this point, the White House press secretaries, they're not allowed to say anything because the president has said, "This is our stance." And I will say that that's a very test of time thing, because we'll find out eventually from these press secretaries like what the real story was. But these poor people have to say whatever the boss decides to say. You're not really asking them to answer questions. You're trying to have them answer the questions that they've been instructed to answer by their boss.
Yeah, Shepard isn't saying anything about his girlfriend, and his poll numbers are dropping, and that's why he had to take this deal in the first place. And eventually Lewis just rips into him and says, "You need to be a better leader."
I love this dialogue between Lewis and the president. And I've thought of this dialogue a long time for how do people vote certain ways? And I just love this idea that when some guy's giving them magic answers, they'll just take it. And this is between Michael J. Fox's character and Michael Douglas's character. And here you go.
You have a deeper love of this country than any man I've ever known. And I want to know what it says to you that in the past 7 weeks, 59% of Americans have begun to question your patriotism.
Look, if people want to listen to
me, they don't have a choice. Bob Rumson is the only one doing the talking. People want leadership, Mr. President. In the absence of genuine leadership, they'll listen to anyone who steps up to the microphone. They want leadership. They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert toward a mirage, and when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand.
Lewis, we have had presidents who were beloved, who couldn't find a coherent sentence with two hands and a flashlight. People don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference.
You know, it's very Sorkin-esque, but it's a real beautiful speech, and also with like thundering clouds in the background. It just works really well.
The line about we've had presidents who couldn't find a coherent sentence with two hands and a flashlight definitely rings true now, given our current president, but not for long, maybe. And it took him a while, but Shepard finally comes around after Sidney dumped him and also said that she wasn't going to vote for him, and Lewis challenging him. President Shepard finally comes to his senses and says he needs to address this head on. And on the morning of the State of the Union speech, which is the thing that they've been building towards this whole movie, and I actually thought was where the movie was going to end, he gives a big speech that morning, but not at the State of the Union, at a press conference, and he goes after Rumson directly. And, you know, he says that if you want to talk about character, you come after me. You do not talk about my girlfriend. It's a great speech. He's had it up to here. And the only thing that I think sort of diminishes the weight of the scene is that, yeah, he really should have said this stuff earlier, which is what everyone had been telling him, Lewis and AJ, and it's what I was thinking as I was watching the movie, like, yeah, respond. Like, he uses the analogy of, like, don't get in the mud with the pig because you both get dirty and the pig likes it, but he should have stood up to him and just said, I am a man of character, how dare you insult my girlfriend, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's a way he could have done that tactfully. But yeah, he finally does it, and then he's determined to win back Sidney, and he's going to drive over there himself, but he doesn't have to because she shows up, and she forgives him. Aww.
Yeah, I think it's very sweet because she forgives him, not because, you know, he comes groveling back, which he does say he was going to do. He was going to grovel, but because of something that he did as a character, and, you know, something that you could tell that Sidney does look for in a man. Here's a man who has really sacrificed something that is wrong for his poll numbers, but is right for, you know, the country and morals. So, because we had addressed earlier that we'll never pass it at 20%, but he goes, you know what, the hell with it. If it's the right thing to do, we're going to send it to the floor with 20%.
And he's not going to send the toothless crime bill to Congress at all. He's going to scrap that entirely and write a new bill that will be effective and will actually reduce crime and is actually going to come after the handguns and the semi-automatic weapons and everything else. And he's going to use his popularity to get it passed, which is probably what he should have done in the first place.
Yeah, and then, you know, this film could have ended a lot of different ways. I would say that the first time I saw this film, I almost thought that this ending was, like, where's the last scene of him triumphantly getting reelected? But more appropriate, I'd say, is that the film just ends with the State of the Union. There's someone who really does yell, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, and everyone starts clapping, and it is kind of a cool ending, and then directed by Rob Reiner, and that's the end. We don't really know what happens to President Andrew Shepard, but we do know that he's decided to fight.
Right. So, James, do you think that this movie stands the test of time?
You know, I think it's remarkable how many things really do stand the test of time, from the way people dodge things and, oh, well, I don't know, people are saying, you know, I heard a rumor that certain people said, I didn't say nothing, you know. But also, there's subtle little things. I love the fact that it was just in a montage at one point. There's a part where there's a newscaster that says, after the break, we'll meet a junior high school classmate of Sydney Ellen Wade who has some amazing news to tell us. Like, you know, what is she going to say that in their, like, truth or dare questions, she kissed three boys at one party? It's going to be something ridiculous, but people like Kate Middleton and these people that are thrust into the spotlight, like, their lives get dissected. And, you know, someone like Andrew Shepherd, he's used to it. But Sydney Ellen Wade, you know, this woman, she by definition is not running for anything. She's a behind the scenes person. So I always feel bad for these people that are thrust into the spotlight. So I like how they play how Annette plays the character. I love the dialogue. I mean, it's fantastic dialogue, fantastic acting. Something that doesn't stand up, you know, I don't remember The West Wing, but I would say that he gets better. It's not as good as The West Wing, but The West Wing, you get to stretch this stuff out. You don't have to stretch in a romantic story in there. You could just stick more to the ethics and politics. There's one thing that doesn't stand up, and that's something that makes watching The West Wing almost hard to watch today, and to a small extent this film, and that is watching a president do what is right, not necessarily for themselves, but for the good of their country. You take a Yitzhak Rabin or an Anwar Sadat, you know, the kind of person that knows, if I sign this peace treaty, I'm gonna be assassinated. But they do it. It's better for their countries to have peace here, and they're killed. You know, it's something that, it's a little foreign to us right now, thinking there is a president that may or may not do everything for quid pro quo, and everything has to be for what do I get out of it, and this president here is going to do something that is not going to help him in any way and only hurt him. And in some ways, you might say that doesn't stand up anymore. But I have to say, Trump winning, Trump losing, the next Trump coming, there will always be another person like this. But the arc of time tends towards the justice. And I think that, yeah, while there won't be a perfect, you know, sweet widower man like Andrew Shepherd, this character will come back. And this is a really nice film. It's kind of hopeful. It's not too sappy. I really like that they don't necessarily show that he wins re-election. Because, Al, when we're recording this episode right now, we don't know if Donald Trump wins re-election. Election, and we don't know if Andrew Shepherd wins re-election, but I like this character at the end of the film rather than about two-thirds of the film, who's kind of a little wimp and doesn't want to realize that the president's the personal life is something the American people are going to get involved with, whether or not they should. And I think this film does stand the test of time. What do you think, Al? Does this film stand up?
Well, I gotta say that I really enjoyed watching this movie, and I think the biggest strength that the movie has is the cast. As great as Rob Reiner and Aaron Sorkin are, I mean, I just think the performances in this movie are top to bottom, just phenomenal. Michael Douglas, Annette Bening, Martin Sheen, Michael J. Fox, I'm not going to name every single person, but they're all really, really good in this movie. And I got to agree with you about, you know, a lot of the sort of big picture things about any political contest. It's going to be about character, and there are going to be casualties, right? People who are sort of not necessarily in the race, but get dragged through the mud. In this movie, it's the president's girlfriend. This year, it's been Joe Biden's son. Like, there's always going to be that person. And these character attacks are prevalent, they are effective, and they work. So a lot of that stuff does stand the test of time. What doesn't stand the test of time, though, is just a lot of things that really date this movie as mid-90s. You know, we were talking about the flag burning being like a big controversy. Now you'd kind of shrug your shoulders at that. The conversation about family values and the widower finding a perfectly appropriate romantic partner that people are up in arms about. Like, no, that doesn't work.
If we find a picture of Pete Buttigieg burning a flag when he was in college, that's going to be a huge issue. Kamala Harris, if she burned a flag when she was 19 years old, it'll be a big issue again.
If it's the person running, if it's the person who was dating someone, you know, like, I don't think it would be the scandal.
They couldn't get Joe Biden, so they go after Hunter Biden. I think they're going to do anything they can to damage you and your reputation.
Yes, I just think that the things that they use in this movie are not totally test of time worthy in terms of the specifics. I also think it's worth pointing out that this movie came out in 1995 with a young, charismatic Democratic president who was going on dates and calling his girlfriend. 3 years later, the Lewinsky scandal breaks. And if for whatever reason, this movie had been stuck in Hollywood development hell for 3 years, I don't think this movie gets released. I think this movie looks very different in 1998 than it does in 1995 when we have a young, charismatic Democratic president who's calling his girlfriend on the phone and sending her flowers, except then it's an inappropriate relationship in real life because he's married and she's a younger intern. It's not the same as what the relationship is in this movie, not by a long shot, but I think it would rub audiences the wrong way in light of the Lewinsky scandal.
Oh, I think that's an excellent point.
Right? Like, this movie could not have come out in 98, 99. But yeah, I mean, like, just the specifics of what brings this president down and like the specifics of the scandal, I really don't think stand the test of time. I do think that Sorkin gets better, and I'm not looking to quote unquote cancel him. It's very easy to find stuff online. I found one article with very little Googling titled "Aaron Sorkin Gets More Sexist Every Year." I do think that if they were to make a movie like this today, they would need to tone down the schoolgirl reactions of the girlfriend character and maybe bump up the conversations about the power imbalance a bit.
Or at least give him something more to be giddy about than the fact that his character apparently has a nice ass. I mean, you're going to have to name drop that he rescued a battalion of American soldiers in Afghanistan and rescued a battalion of Taliban fighters, too, because he just wouldn't let anyone die. You know, I'm not against her swooning over him, but she's only swooning over him for possibly superficial reasons. He's the president and she finds him physically attractive at that point.
Right. I think, though, what really doesn't stand the test of time in this movie is just the specifics of the plot. You know, that his favorability rating plummets because he has a girlfriend who is completely appropriate on every level. The fact that the Republican is going after him because he doesn't have good family values, and the Republican Party is the party of family values. I'm sorry, that went out the window with the Trump presidency. When Republicans can defend a thrice divorced guy who cheated on his first wife with his second wife, and his second wife with his third wife, and on his third wife with a porn star, you are not the party of family values anymore. Sorry, that is gone forever.
Oh, Al, that's so sweet that you think that. No, Al, they are, yes, going to be the party of family values for as long as they can sell it.
No, I don't think they can sell it anymore. I think that's over.
That would be so hypocritical of them.
Right.
If Joe Biden wins the presidency, we are exactly a few days away from Republicans suddenly remembering the debt and the deficit.
Right. I get your point. Republicans are hypocrites. But I think that the American people will remember. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Also, the fact that the Republican nominee is going after the Democratic president because he's a commander-in-chief who never served in the military. Republicans all serve in the military. Again, that also goes out the window with Trump. I think that there's too many of these specific things that really rubber stamp this movie as mid-90s. Not even 90s. Pre-Lewinsky 90s, that I'm going to say the movie does not stand the test of time. And again, I like the movie. I enjoyed the movie. I'm very glad I watched it. Phenomenal cast, great writing, great direction. But I just think that based on the world we live in today, it doesn't stand the test of time. This is one of those movies where I'm saying no, even though I like the movie. Sometimes we say yes, even when we don't like the movie. It's just not in 2020, not anymore.
I hear what you're saying, but you're not saying the movie doesn't stand the test of time. You're saying that Donald Trump ruined this movie for you.
I mean, he ruined a lot of things for me.
There will eventually not be a Donald Trump or a Donald Trump-like person in power. Yes, the 90s hairdo is going to be different, but the idea of this president, come on.
But even forgetting all that, the country is so polarized that if you have a movie where there is a beloved president and another person from another party who's the bad guy, it doesn't matter if you call them Democrats and Republicans. You could call them Whigs and Tories, but still people are going to look at it and say, oh, they're attacking me. I hate this movie, liberal Hollywood elitist crap. And you're going to lose half of the audience. It's not going to work. I don't think you can make a movie about a charming, charismatic president that everyone likes now. I just don't think that'll happen.
That is very true, because people used to attack Republican and Democratic the congressmen and politicians. But in 2016, people started attacking the supporters. Either Trump supporters are deplorable people, or, oh, Hillary Clinton, those liberal loons that believe this stuff. You know, it almost seems like the montage of them trying to sway votes is done today, because all you have to do is look after their name. If it says dash R or dash D after their name, that's the vote. But I'm just not as cynical. I want to wish that, you know, the idea of this president stand the test of time. But I completely see what you're saying. I just have a different outlook on it. So very interesting take, Al.
Why, thank you. I thank you for picking this movie. I did really enjoy it, despite the no verdict. But that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, we are going to be talking about Crocodile Dundee. This came as a request on Facebook from one of our listeners, Cody Jones. Cody, sorry it took us so long to get around to this movie. But hey, you know, it's November. We're thankful for our fans who listen and make requests. So we're going to do Crocodile Dundee for you, Cody. And I'm excited to watch that movie again. That'll be fun. I'm sure it'll have far less presidential references. Probably. But don't miss that episode. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, whatever podcast streamer you use. And talk to us at Test of Time Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We want to hear your thoughts on The American President, the movie. You can tell us your thoughts on The American President in real life, American presidents of the past, whatever. Just talk to us. We love hearing from you. And we'll see you next time, everybody.
Bye.